This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 8th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 237. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature. Cybersecurity expert Dave Masson from Darktrace joins me to talk about cybersecurity threats and how to stay safe in the digital world. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or was the NDP Attorney General David Eby's creative solutions for the crime wave the dumpster fire of creative solutions? A report due in 120 days means the summer could see the status quo remain. There is already a revolving door of mentally ill and drug-addicted criminals smashing windows, painting graffiti, shoplifting, and beating up, and even killing, innocent women and seniors in BC cities. This is not peculiar to BC. Everywhere that the Defund the Police movement sprang up 2 years ago is suffering from a broken law and order system today. This problem needs immediate attention. One idea? Night court. If, say, one courtroom opened for 2 hours a night, Monday to Friday from 7 to 9 p.m. in Vancouver, Surrey, and Victoria, the backlog of cases could be greatly reduced to pre-pandemic levels. That would also allow judges to spend more time on weekdays presiding over cases and sentencing hearings. Justice delayed is justice denied. The NDP moved very fast early in the pandemic to allow liquor stores to open early in the morning and close late at night. The time has come for night court. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Joining me on the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast is my guest, Dave Masson, who is director of enterprise security at Darktrace, an international cybersecurity firm based in Cambridge, England. Dave Masson is a former senior manager in the UK Ministry of Defence and Public Safety Canada. He joins me from the Ottawa area. Last week was World Press Freedom Day. Not only are reporters covering more stories about security issues that face the lives of Canadians, but journalists themselves are trying to keep safe from security threats.
What tips do you have for journalists and media outlets in this brave new world?
Thanks for having me on, Bob. You're absolutely right. Journalists do seem to be under increasing attack, as were physical attack and cyber attack. We've seen journalists being attacked in the streets. I remember if you watched the insurrection at the White House back in January, first thing a lot of the rioters went for was anybody with a camera and straight at them. And we've seen that in Canada too. So that's being physically attacked when trying to do their jobs outside and on the streets. But at the same time, they're also under cyber attack. And why are they under cyber attack? Because journalists' job are to go out and find things, find out about things, collect information, process that information, and then guess what? Disclose that information to the public for the public good. And obviously to some people, to some threat actors, nation states, criminal gangs, whatever it might be, they don't want them collecting that information and they really don't want that information being disclosed. And so they use cyber to try and attack journalists, to corrupt the data, steal the data, whatever it is, to actually stop that from happening. So yep, it's a real thing.
In 2022, we've seen far-right anti-vaccine truckers and far-left environmental activists blocking highways and blocking bridges. Journalists are facing threats on the streets and online from radicalized people on opposite ends of the political spectrum, some people who are anonymous and others who are not.
Okay, the first thing to do is to realize is that you could well be a target. Okay, so dispel any myths of I'm a journalist and I'm protected and people will respect that and leave me alone. That's not the case. You are a target. So just take a deep breath, suck that one in and realize, yeah, I can be a target. And that's a great step towards protecting yourself. The second is to start thinking about what we in the business call cyber hygiene. You'll notice that in the cyber world, we tend to use the same vocabulary as they use in the medical world, viruses, things spreading and infections and all the rest of it. So it's to start thinking about cyber hygiene and just start thinking, pretty much stick to some of the basics, actually. Believe it or not, really do have a strong password for your email accounts and all your other accounts and your Slack accounts and your Teams accounts or whatever they are. Have a proper, strong password. Do not keep going for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, all right? Have a really strong password. And if people are stuck with passwords, they might try passphrases. You'll see a lot of nation state advisory bodies talking about this. This is where you pick three random one syllable, four letter words. Let's see, dogs, cats, bats. Now that's a pretty simple one. So a bit sort of more complicated than that. But something that's really difficult to decrypt. So strong passwords. The second thing is to realize that you're probably better off using what we call multi-factor authentication or two-factor authentication. Whereas it's not just a password you need to get into your accounts or your media streams or your Twitter account. It has to be a password. And then the organization sends you a code and only you can receive that code. And then you use that code to get in. That makes it very, very, very difficult for cyber threat actors to get into your accounts, corrupt your accounts or whatever they're going to do. And one other thing that I would encourage the media to realize is that public Wi-Fi, if you're out and about and you're using public Wi-Fi, because journalists, you must be on your phones all the time. So your data, unless you've got a fantastic data plan, you might think, you know what, I'll just log on to the shopping mall Wi-Fi to do my business. It's not safe. It is not secure. Don't ever use your credit card or do your banking on public Wi-Fi. Don't go about your journalistic business while using public Wi-Fi because it's quite simply not secure. So those are some sort of very early tips to make you to get you on your way. And another quite obvious one is obviously, and this is the thing about journalists, is you have to be very open to pretty much everybody because you want people to approach you to offer information. Bad guys and threat actors know that. So it's when you get an email or a text and it's got a link and you don't know who it's from or whatever, just take a deep breath and a big pause before deciding whether you're going to click on that link or not. And I would actually advise not clicking on the link. If somebody's offering you information that says, it's in here, click on this link, I just hit the reply button and say, no, just tell me in the email, okay? Don't look at the attachment, don't click on the link. This is some basic stuff, but that can actually save you from a lot of trouble. Actually, save you a lot of criminal trouble, never mind nation state trouble.
What are you seeing right now in 2022 that the media needs to keep an eye on now and in the next few months that could become challenges, by the end of this year or next year that'll have to force us to change our security thinking when it comes to communicating with sources, when it comes to receiving sensitive documents from whistleblowers?
Okay, threat actors are constantly innovating. They're innovating faster than the cybersecurity market innovates, to be perfectly honest with you. So something to realize is what secure today may not be secure tomorrow, or what you think is secure now maybe isn't and might be even less secure tomorrow. So you always need to bear that in mind. And always remember that once something has been proven to be unsecure, then you suddenly think, well, I've been using this for 9 months. Well, that's 9 months of all your information that's no longer secure. It might have been secure 9 months ago, but it isn't now. So what you've got to understand is these developments keep moving apace. And in some ways, although you yourself said, how do we keep one step ahead? Do you know what? It's really difficult to keep one step ahead of our attackers. It's more likely that we're always one step behind, but the important thing is to keep just the one step behind and be prepared to actually, they might get in, but then to stop any further damage from taking place. So somebody might get in your email account, but then you don't have an address book behind that email account. There's not actually nothing there for them to find. They're going to get in, but there's nothing there for them to find. You've put it somewhere else. Guess what? You might just have your little black book. Same thing on your phone. You don't keep your sensitive sources on your phone, so somebody gets on your phone. Sure, they got your phone, but there's actually nothing for them to find there. So that's something they should bear in mind, that they probably will get in. And if it's a nation state that's having going after you, and that's going to sound awful, you're probably doomed. But you can still make it. They might be able to get in, but there's nothing for them to find. Looking at trends over this year, putting aside the Russia-Ukraine bit for the moment, because that's had quite an effect on the whole world threat landscape. As a single incident, pretty much ransomware, in the words of that song, never give up on a good thing, that's just going to, there's going to be more and more and more of it. The cyber news headlines have been grabbed by the Ukraine at the moment, but ransomware is becoming an increasingly bigger threat all the time. And so people should be aware of it. and take good cyber hygiene measures to make sure they don't get caught out by it. Another thing that's come back that had gone away for a while, but is back in vogue again, is what we call cryptojacking. Now, some people often think of this as a victimless crime, but it's where basically threat actors, bad guys, get onto your computer. You don't know it, but they end up using your hydro bill, your electricity bill, and your computing power to mine cryptocurrencies. That's quite a common one. It's back in vogue. It's sometimes difficult to notice. The most obvious thing is your computer gets a bit slow and your battery keeps running out all the time. But if somebody can get on and put cryptocurrency mining on your laptop, that means they can get onto your laptop and everything else that's actually on board that's on there. Some of the other features that we are likely to see as the year goes on, and journalists might well want to bear this in mind, is something that it's been around for a while. It was originally something that the Iranians tended to do, but now the Russians are going into it big time. We've seen that in Ukraine. This is where people get onto your systems, get onto your laptop, your phone, and they just destroy it. They just wipe everything out. They've got no interest in stealing your data. They've got no interest in locking it up and holding it to ransom, but they just literally wipe it out. And obviously for some journalists, maybe many journalists, in fact, that'd be quite a bit of a disaster for that to actually happen. We've seen that take off big time in Ukraine, but as I say, it's been around for many, many years, wiper malware, but we're probably going to see more of that. And last but by no means least, and although this really isn't about attacking journalists, but it's something that our governments have been telling us repeatedly since January, is we can probably going to see attacks on what we call critical infrastructure or critical national infrastructure, including here in Canada. Our own government's warned us repeatedly about this. Hasn't happened yet, but if they're telling us, they're probably telling us because they've got a good reason for telling us.
My guest is cybersecurity expert Dave Masson of Darktrace. He said the 2021 shutdown of the Colonial Gas Pipeline by hackers was a huge wake-up call to everyone in North America. In March of this year, U.S. President Joe Biden warned that more cyber attacks were coming and everybody should be prepared. This happens while the global supply chain remains in a state of chaos due to the COVID-19 pandemic and the war in Ukraine.
Yeah, absolutely. Look at the cost. I don't know if anybody's tried to buy a brand new car recently. They're really difficult to get your hands on because there's no chips. There's not enough chips to put in the vehicles to put them out. And even the price of secondhand cars is starting to rocket because you can't get your hands on brand new cars. And perfect example of a supply chain issue. Threat actors do understand what they can do by using the supply chain. They usually use it to attack an awful lot of people. We saw that with the SolarWinds attack. We saw it last year with something called the Kaseya attack, where threat actors used Kaseya software to, instead of having to go after it and put ransomware on one organization, then another, they're able to do 1,700 all at one go. That's a very common, an increasingly common attack vector. The thing about the supply chain is you can put rules, regulations, and compliance in place. Governments can do it so that everybody does have good cyber hygiene. So you know that your suppliers do have good cyber hygiene and that the supplier's supplier has good cyber hygiene. But it's almost impossible to actually verify. You're in a position of where, do you know what? Yeah, I do trust you, but do you know what? I'm just going to make absolutely extra specially sure. And that's the feature that most people are going to have to adopt, most organizations, departments, businesses, et cetera, is to accept that I can't trust the supply chain. I'm just going to have to make damn sure that if it causes me a problem, I'm only one step behind, not one step ahead, but that I can catch it early off and stop any actual damage. They might get in, but I'll stop any damage from being done.
I asked Dave Masson about cybersecurity for anyone with a smartphone, which can be at risk of surveillance and data mining. The government of Canada was tracking movements of the public early in the pandemic via smartphone data. After last week's leak of the U.S. Supreme Court decision on abortion, Vice Motherboard reported that tracking data of abortion clinic patients is for sale. App developers were selling data about where the app users went before and after visiting the clinics.
Canada's laws for privacy are stronger than the U.S., but often what we see in the U.S. happens in Canada too. What should people be careful about when they're using their apps and their phones so that they don't become part of one of these data sets that someone can buy and find out more about them?
By the way, and also it could be applied to a journalist who's what he did before a meeting, where he was at the meeting and where he went or she went to afterwards. These are serious issues. Bob, this has been around for a long, long time. These things can be located. Very, very accurately located now. And in many ways, people need to realize that when they sign up to these apps, they've got to really pour through the agreements. Because if you don't, you may well discover that you've basically said, yep, you can have my metadata, not my personal data, not my address book, not my photographs or whatever, but you can have all the metadata that surrounds my use of the phone. That's what most of these organizations do. They're using what's called metadata. It's not strictly the packets themselves of the data, it's the stuff around them. And you can use that to see where people have been. You can see how fast they're moving when they're in vehicles, that kind of thing, and essentially following around. But that's an issue. It's an old one, but it's a golden one. If you sign up for an app that does this, that, and the next thing, and it's free, you are probably the product, and the product will be the metadata that you signed up to give to the company, which you're saying that they can use for marketing purposes. Hence why you go out for a bicycle ride, and as you're going past a shopping arcade, you get notifications on your phone for some of the products that are in the shopping arcade as you cycle past it, because whoever the big marketing company that's got your data knows you're going past those shops, okay? And they can send that stuff to you. That's the idea. It's to push, most of the time, it's to push products at people. But it's a very real issue. Now, people see that as a privacy issue. I see it as a privacy and a security issue. My background's in national security, and I'm always one of these people that says, no national security, no human rights. And it's the same thing with privacy and security. No security, you've got no privacy. You have to have both. Now, and that's not big authoritarian uncles speaking about this. It's a simple fact of life. If you want to build privacy into an application or into a device, you need to do it right from the beginning, not try and force it on at the end of the product. And it's the same with security. They both have to run in hand till you finally come up with something you want to put out in the market and for people to use. Because quite often, if you don't do that, it just simply won't work. And this is why you see patching happening so often, where all the apps you've got need to be updated regularly. It's because people discover something not right with them, usually often to do with privacy, but security at the same time. And they have to be updated. And that should be a warning to people that your phone isn't the best it can be right now. It can get better once it gets patched when things go wrong.
The first 4 months of 2022 have been dominated by China and Russia. First, the Beijing 2022 Winter Olympics, where Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin reaffirmed their friendship. Then, after the Paralympics, Putin's unjustified invasion of Ukraine. One of the fronts in the war is online, a cyber war. Hackers have revealed damning information about Russia and the oligarchs.
Where do you think this is all going when it comes to what Russia and China are doing and their spot on the cyber security or threat landscape?
Right. I'll start with where are we now? I think we're all still in this surprised phase that Russia wasn't able to use cyber to destroy Ukraine, attack its critical national infrastructure and bring it down. It's attacking it all right, and it's attacking it daily. But Ukraine has managed to hold itself up quite well. Now, I think we're all quite confident that Ukraine's getting an awful lot of help from an awful lot of other countries to fight back and to protect its cyber infrastructure. But they've succeeded. We're all presuming that in the way that we think of the Russian military as this massive monolith that just rolls in and crushes you, we're expecting the same thing from cyber. Neither have now actually happened. The Russian army's proved to be very ineffective, although there's a lot of it, nor has their fabled cyber abilities proven to be what we were expecting them to be. Now, having said that, Russian cyber ability is very, very good. If you imagine what we can do, well, they can do it, and they probably can do it better because they've been unconstrained by rule of law and democratic values that we have here in the West. So we're in the surprised phase, and we're in the what's going to happen next phase. Now, as I said a few moments ago, our governments are warning us that we've got to be on our toes and be prepared for attacks. A new precedent was set around this war where Western nations disclosed intelligence, basically said the Russians are going to attack, and this is how they're going to do it. And that actually happened. So if our governments are now telling us this, they're telling us because they know that something's likely to happen at some point. And I think that it will be the case. This war will either come to an end, hopefully by diplomatic means, but at some point, it's going to reach a stasis. And at some point, if things don't go too well for Russia, they may well just start to lash out. They haven't done so already, despite the fact, as you pointed out, they've taken a hell of a hiding from everybody else in the world, just for want of a better word, volunteers who've had a go. By the way, Russia and China have always been at the forefront of trying to take their nations off the internet. And most people presume that's because they're all about controlling their populations and making sure they're in charge of the message and all that kind of thing. Maybe that is, there's an element of truth to that, but it's also because they're actually frightened of cyber attacks, cyber threat. They are aware that they're poor at protecting their own digital infrastructure. And so it has come to be when we've seen a lot of these hacks going on. Amazing stuff that's been stolen from the Russians. They were frightened about that and considered one way of avoiding it is to come off the internet altogether. But we need to be wary of the Russians eventually lashing out, but also we need to be wary of escalation, mistakes being made, an attack by a white hat group being misinterpreted by the Russians as Canada having a real go at them and causing some trouble. What isn't us, it's just somebody else. And then things start to escalate because it's very difficult to tone down escalation when one side has a set of rules and values, which we do here in the West and in Canada, and the other side doesn't. And it's very easy to escalate quite quickly, very easy for miscalculation to take place. And that's probably what we should really be worried about, is miscalculation leading to escalation and things getting worse.
Well, thanks again to Dave Masson for joining us on the Breaker.News podcast. Dave is with Darktrace, the Canadian office of Darktrace, an international cybersecurity firm that's based in Cambridge, England. He's the director of enterprise security for Darktrace Canada. He's based near Ottawa, and he's also a former senior manager with Public Safety Canada and the UK Ministry of Defence. Thanks again for joining us.
You're very welcome.
News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In the Taiwan news, Anonymous warns China don't try anything stupid against Taiwan. The hacker group Anonymous took a break from cyber war in Russia and hacked into the Chengdu Communist Party website. Anonymous posted its logo and the Taiwan number one meme and Taiwan's national anthem on the page. It demanded, among other things, for China to mediate a stop to Russia's attack on Ukraine. The website was pulled offline by Chinese authorities. In Kyoto news, IOC to inspect proposed 2030 Sapporo Olympics venues this month. International Olympic Committee staff will visit venues in Hokkaido, northern Japan, to check on their current operating conditions and sizes in order for the IOC's Winter Future Host Commission, charged with identifying host cities, to compile the materials and documents it needs. The inspection is done in private and takes a few days. Japanese Olympic Committee representatives will accompany inspectors. According to the Sapporo bid outline, competitions would take place at 13 different venues, excluding Sapporo Dome, which would host the opening and closing ceremonies. Bobsleigh and sledding events would be held in Nagano, the host of the 1998 Winter Olympics. The IOC inspectors were in Vancouver last week. In Hong Kong Free Press, former pro-democracy lawmaker Fernando Chung leaves Hong Kong for Canada after jail term. Chung's departure was later confirmed by former lawmaker Xu Ke-chun in a Facebook post on Wednesday. He said that he had kept Chung's departure a secret until he had safely landed in Toronto. During his terms as a legislator, Chung advocated for underprivileged groups, including ethnic minorities, people with disabilities, refugees, and those living in poverty. In February, Chung was sentenced to 3 weeks in prison after he admitted to breaching the Legislative Council Powers and Privileges Ordinance by chanting slogans for close to 44 minutes during a House committee meeting in May 2020. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Amazon seeks tax breaks for 5 new data centers worth $12 billion in remote Oregon County. The deal could add hundreds of jobs and fill regional tax coffers in Morrow County, 160 miles east of Portland. Amazon is already the county's largest taxpayer by far, accounting for a third of all property tax revenues due to 4 large data centers it built over the past several years. Data centers come to rural Oregon for cheap land, ample water, and relatively inexpensive electricity, essential for powering and cooling all those computers. The Umatilla Electric Cooperative reports that industrial power consumption is up 266% since 2016. In the Seattle Times, analysis: how big of a deal is CCL title for Seattle in the MLS, and what's next for Sounders? Seattle being the history maker for the U.S. could be the best-case scenario for soccer's growth in America. Sounders striker Raul Rui Diaz's brace led the club to a 3-0 win against Pumas UNAM in the second leg of the CCL final at Lumen Field on Wednesday. The Sounders are the first to clinch a spot, while UEFA Champions League will crown Liverpool FC or Real Madrid its winner on May 28th. The other winners will come from Asia's AFC Champions League, Africa's CAF Champions League, South America's Copa Libertadores, and Oceania's OFC Champions League. And in the Times Colonist, bullets pop, cannabis grow up goes up in smoke in Chaminas warehouse fire. More than 45 firefighters were on the scene from 5 fire departments, and they initially attacked the blaze from the outside before moving inside. A store of ammunition started popping as crews knocked down the interior fire. The caliber and number of bullets has not been determined. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. And it don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to nurses in British Columbia. It is Nursing Week from May 9th to 15th. Thank you all for the job you do to keep us healthy. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 8th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 8th of May in 1980, the World Health Organization announced the eradication of smallpox? The disease killed more than 500 million people over 100 years. It killed tens of thousands of Aboriginal people in British Columbia. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news, and you can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Happy Mother's Day. Until next week.